This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 2 Kings. And now here's Pastor Sandy in 2 Kings chapter 6 with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
This was a borrowed axe. Man, the guy who's working with this thing, he says, I got to get this thing back. I got to return it. And so the man of God said, where did it fall? And he showed him the place. And so he cut off a stick and threw it in there. And he made the iron float. Therefore, he said, pick it up for yourself. So he reached out his hand and he took it. Now, Elisha throws a stick into the river where the axe head has sunk. And miraculously, the iron floats to the surface. Today, modern man has found ways to make iron float. Just go down to the harbor and watch the Navy vessels sail in and out. If man can engineer iron floating, then it shouldn't surprise us that God has his ways as well. What Elisha did, though, was perform a miracle of retrieval. Notice this. A miracle of retrieval. He recovered what everyone thought was lost. And he did it by throwing a stick into the water. Think of what's been lost in your life tonight. Think of what's been lost. Do you have rusted talents? Is your marriage on the rocks? Has your mind been burned out with drugs? Do you have a heart that's lost its innocence? And what's worse, what you've lost was borrowed. For they were all God's gifts, weren't they? God gave them to you to be used for His glory. You see, on our own, we're sunk until God tossed in a stick, a roughed out piece of wood. We call it the old rugged cross. God has redeemed the world through that stick. He's retrieved us and all that's been lost from sin and Satan, our mind and our talents and our heart and our marriage. He's raised us up from the depths. Once during the Easter season, there was a little boy who noticed all of the crosses on the front lawns of the neighborhood churches. And so he asked his mom, why all the plus signs? I like that though, for the cross is definitely a plus. Man was weighted down by sin until God tossed in the stick. Add the cross. Add the cross of Jesus, and the solution of sin suddenly becomes crystal clear. The weight of sin is removed. The load becomes light. What was lost is retrieved once you toss in the stick, that old rugged cross. Well, in verse 8, the king of Syria is at war with Israel. But the Israelis have a secret weapon. Now, the king of Syria was making war against Israel. And he consulted with his servants, saying, my camp will be in such and such a place. And the man of God sent to the king of Israel, saying, beware that you do not pass this place, for the Syrians are coming down there. Then the king of Israel sent someone to the place of which the man of God had told him. Thus he warned him, and he was watchful there, not just once or twice. In other words, this thing keeps happening. I mean, the king of Syria makes his plans, and somehow the army in Israel's respond to it. They're figuring out what he's saying to his court, to his associates. Therefore, the heart of the king of Syria was greatly troubled by this thing, and he called his servants, and he said to them, will you not show me which of us is for the king of Israel? I mean, every time the Syrians have a strategic battle maneuver, God revealed their whereabouts to Elisha. And so the king of Israel could counter. And finally, the king of Syria gets tired of this and he suspects a traitor in his court. There's a spy. He calls a meeting to find the guy who's the spy. Well, that's when the king's servant tells him, none, my lord, O king, but Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, he tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom. In other words, king, you can't whisper to your wife in your bed without Elisha knowing what you've said. You know, when we visit the Golan Heights, you can see on top of the mountains the high-tech surveillance equipment. And this equipment is aimed at the city of Damascus. Today, Israel still hears the king of Syria in his bedroom. Just through a little different method, through this high-tech surveillance. Here, though, is the ultimate in espionage, divine surveillance. I remember when our kids were little, we had a baby monitor in their room. We had one monitor in their room, and we had one monitor in our room so we could hear them. If anything, they woke up in the night or whatever. And the family across the street, they also had an infant. And they too had one of this baby monitor system. And one day my neighbor and I, we were talking out in the yard, and he said, "Oh, by the way, I heard your wife and you talking last night on our monitor." That's kind of unnerving. To know that your neighbor's listening to you with your wife in your bedroom, you know, talking. Evidently he had picked up our frequency. But it's scarier to realize that no conversation is hidden from the ears of God. Hey, don't think that you and your wife are completely alone, that nobody's listening. God is always listening to every conversation, to every whisper. Here's proof. Well, verse 13. So he said, "Go and see where it is that I may send and get him." King of Syria is going to arrest Elisha, or so he thinks. And it was told him, saying, "Surely he is in Dothan." And Dothan was a little town just north of Israel's capital of Samaria. "Therefore he sent horses and chariots and a great army there. And they came by night and surrounded the city." This is an extraordinary effort to capture one man, a great army. "And when the servant of the man of God arose early and went out, there was an army surrounding the city with horses and chariots." He was stunned. "And his servant said to him, 'Alas, my master, what shall we do?' The servant is coming unglued while Elisha is as cool as the bottom of the pillow." And so he answered, "Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them." What do you mean by that? Wait a minute now, it's you, there's me, there's one, there's two. What do you mean, those that are with us? And Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see." Then the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Heaven had dispatched an angelic army to protect Elisha and his servants. It was the Syrians who were surrounded, not Elisha. Now the servant can see. Guys, listen to Psalm 34, verse 7. "Then the angel of the Lord encamps all around those who fear him and delivers them." The angel of the Lord encamps around us. I would imagine a few angels know our name. I had a couple of the kids that came back. Do we have angel food cake in the brook? I thought we did. I had a couple of the kids walking through the sanctuary this afternoon, and one of them said to the other, said, "You know what angel food cake is, don't you?" And he said, "No, what?" He says, "It's dead angel." Dead angel. I just threw that in. There's no such thing as dead angel. They're eternal beings, and they're vigilant about guarding God's saints. You know, so often people say that faith is blind. But to the contrary, the person with faith sees more than other people see. You see, secular eyes see only the physical and the mental aspects of life. Their sight is sort of two-dimensional. But spiritual eyes see 3D. Their vision includes the spiritual realm. Faith enables us to see the whole picture. Eyes of faith enable us to see what God is doing in any given situation. This is why we need eyes of faith. Well, in verse 18, the Syrians, they move in to arrest Elisha. And so when the Syrians came down to him, Elisha prayed to the Lord and said, "Strike this people, I pray, with blindness." And he struck them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. And what happens next is hilarious. Now, Elisha said to them, "This is not the way, nor is this the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man whom you seek." But he led them to Samaria, right into the lap of the king of Israel. Elisha walks Israel's blind enemy down Main Street and turns him over to the king. Isn't that amazing? And so it was, when they had come to Samaria, that Elisha said, "Lord, open the eyes of these men that they may see." And the Lord opened their eyes and they saw, and there they were inside Samaria. Now when the king of Israel saw them, he said to Elisha, "My father, shall I kill them? Shall I kill them?" Now remember, Elisha was known for his mercy. Elijah was known for his power and his judgment. Elisha the prophet was known for his grace and his mercy. So verse 22, "But he answered, 'You shall not kill them. Would you kill those you have taken captive with your sword and your bow? Set food and water before them that they may eat and drink and go to their master.' And then he prepared a great feast for them. And after they ate and drank, he sent them away and they went to their master. So the bands of Syrian raiders came no more into the land of Israel." And so for the moment, this show of mercy creates a peace, a truce between Israel and Syria. But the peace was short-lived. For verse 24 tells us, "It happened after this that Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, gathered all his army and went up and besieged Samaria." Now understand the military strategy behind a siege. You surround the city and you cut off the supply lines. And then it becomes sort of a waiting game. And if you're patient, you can starve out the enemy. You can wait until all of their supplies have been exhausted. And then they're forced to surrender. And this was what was happening inside the Israeli capital. And there was a great famine in Samaria. And indeed, they besieged it until a donkey's head was sold for 80 shekels of silver and 1/4 of a cob or a pint of dove droppings for 5 shekels of silver. Now, this was a national disaster. Under normal circumstances, a donkey's head was considered unedible, and yet it was being sold for 80 shekels. People were so hungry, they were eating a donkey's head, paying good money for it, prime rib price. A pint of dove dew was selling for 5 shekels of silver. I mean, this was terrible. People were washing their cars and then parking them under birds' nests, hoping that their feathered friends would sort of fly by and land a contribution on their windshield. Give me some benevolence. And it got worse. Verse 26. "Then as the king of Israel was passing by on the wall, a woman cried out to him saying, 'Help my lord, O king.' And he said, 'If the Lord does not help you, where can I find help for you? For the threshing floor or from the wine press?'" You know, he's being sarcastic. I mean, yeah, you know, we're really running the threshing floor over there. Wine press is cooking. I mean, nothing was going on. There was no food. But that's when the king gets a sense that something even worse is happening, something worse than he could have possibly imagined. The king said to her, "What is troubling you?" And she answered, "This woman said to me, 'Give your son that we may eat him today, and we will eat my son tomorrow.' So we boiled my son and ate him. And I said to her on the next day, 'Give your son that we may eat him.' But she has hidden her son." And the king is appalled. Women are boiling their babies, resorting to cannibalism. The situation is so desperate. The people are so hungry. "Now it happened when the king heard the words of the woman that he tore his clothes. And as he passed by on the wall, the people looked, and there underneath, he had sackcloth on his body." The king, too, was desperate. But look at the conclusion he draws. Rather than confess his sins, for that's the reason that they were in this condition, rather he says, "God do so to me and more also if the head of Elisha, the son of Shaphat, remains on him today." He blames Elisha on this tragedy. The king should have opened his Bible and read Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 53. Moses had predicted that when the people disobey the law, curses will come upon them, among which you shall eat the fruit of your own body, the flesh of your sons and your daughters, whom the Lord your God has given you in the siege and desperate straits in which your enemy shall distress you. All this that had come upon them had been predicted by God. If they disobeyed the law, this is how they would be cursed. The king should have known his Bible, and he would have known that the solution was for him to repent, not blame it on Elisha. But Elisha, he was sitting in his house, and the elders were sitting with him. And the king sent a man ahead of him, but before the messenger came to him, Elisha said to the elders, "Do you see how this son of a murderer," that's Elisha's description of the king, "you see how this son of a murderer has sent someone to take away my head? Look, when the messenger comes, shut the door and hold him fast against the door." In other words, pin him between the door and the jamb when he walks in. "Is not the sound of his master's feet behind him?" In other words, the king's going to show up next. "And while he was still talking with him, there was the messenger coming down to him. And then the king said, 'Surely this calamity is from the Lord. Why should I wait for the Lord any longer?'" Chapter 7. Then Elisha said, "Hear the word of the Lord." And Elisha makes a mind-boggling prediction. Never has a prophet gone this far out on the limb. Trust me. "Thus tomorrow about this time, a seah of fine flour shall be sold for a shekel, and 2 seahs of barley for a shekel at the gate of Samaria." A seah was 8 gallons. A shekel was the equivalent of 60 cents. Understand, 1 pint of Dove Dew is selling for 5 shekels. 24 hours later, 8 gallons of fine flour and 16 gallons of barley grain will sell for a single shekel. How could such a dramatic turnaround happen in such a short period of time? And this is the conclusion that one of the king's officials draws. Notice verse 2. "An officer on whose hand the king leaned answered the man of God and said, 'Look, if the Lord would make windows in heaven, could this thing be?'" He scoffed at God's promise. "There's no way, man." Here was his problem. His heart wouldn't believe what his mind couldn't conceive. And this is our problem. This is the huge stumbling block to faith. As long as a person can see a way for God to work it out, as long as we can see a possible scenario for how God can do it, then we'll believe. But what happens when the promise seems impossible? When we look at the situation and we think, there's no way to solve this problem. Are we going to limit God to only what our flesh can figure? To only what our mind can muster? Hey, God is able to work outside of our lines. Don't box him in. He has means that you and I know nothing about. Well, Elisha, he warns the king's scoffing servant that God will get the last laugh. He tells him, "In fact, you shall see it with your eyes, but you shall not eat of it." Well, the Lord works this miracle in a most unexpected way. Verse 3. "Now there were 4 leprous men at the entrance of the gate. And they said to one another, 'Why are we sitting here until we die? If we say we will enter the city, the famine is in the city and we shall die there. And if we sit here, we shall die also. Now therefore, come, let us surrender to the army of the Assyrians. If they keep us alive, we shall live. If they kill us, we shall but die.'" No, we're going to die anyway. No matter what we do, we're probably going to die. So, you know, let's just see what happens. God starts this miracle with 4 lepers who've got nothing to lose. Kind of funny. "And they rose at twilight to go to the camp of the Syrians. And when they had come to the outskirts of the Syrian camp, to their surprise, no one was there." No one's home. "For the Lord had caused the army of the Syrians to hear the noise of chariots and the noise of horses, the noise of a great army. So they said to one another, 'Look, the king of Israel has hired against us the king of the Hittites and the king of the Egyptians to attack us.' Therefore they arose and fled at twilight and left the camp intact, their tents, their horses, and their donkeys, and they fled for their lives." God fooled the Syrians. He created an illusion. The Syrians thought they were under attack. They thought Israel had hired mercenaries to fight for them. The Syrians panicked and split, and they left their tables full of food. Their supplies were well stocked. I mean, what was the noises? We don't know. Kathy says that when I snore at night, I sound like a stampede of horses. So, you know, who knows? Maybe God recorded my snoring and played it for the Syrians, you know, and they thought they were being attacked, and they split. And when these lepers came to the outskirts of the camp, they went into one tent and ate and drank and carried from it silver and gold and clothing and went and hid them. Then they came back and entered another tent and carried some from there also and went and hid it. I mean, these guys had hit the jackpot. They won the lottery. But that's when it dawns on them that this is not just about us. There's thousands of hungry people back in Samaria. Verse 9, and so they said to one another, we are not doing what's right. This day is a day of good news, and we remain silent. If we wait until morning light, some punishment will come upon us. Now, therefore, come, let us go and tell the king's household. And so they went and called to the gatekeepers of the city and told them, saying, we went to the Syrian camp, and surprisingly, no one was there, not a human sound, only horses and donkeys tied and the tents intact. And the gatekeepers called out, and they told it to the king's household inside. And so the king arose in the night, and he said to his servants, let me now tell you what the Syrians have done to us. They know that we are hungry. Therefore, they have gone out of the camp to hide themselves in the field, saying, when they come out of the city, we shall catch them alive and get into the city. And one of his servants answered and said, please, let several men take five of the remaining horses. I mean, they had eaten all the others, which are left in the city. Look, they may either become like all the multitude of Israel that are left in it, or indeed, I say, they may become like all the multitude of Israel left from those who are consumed. So let us send them and see. They draw the lepers' conclusion. Man, we got nothing to lose anyway. Well, therefore, they took two chariots with horses, and the king sent them in the direction of the Syrian army, saying, go and see. And they went after them to the Jordan. And indeed, all the road was full of garments and weapons, which the Syrians had thrown away in their haste. So the messengers returned and told the king. Then the people went out and plundered the tents of the Syrians. And remember the prediction of Elisha. So a seah of fine flour was sold for a shekel, and two seahs of barley for a shekel, according to the word of the Lord. And I wonder what happened to that official who scoffed at God's promise. Verse 17. Now the king had appointed the officer on whose hand he leaned to have charge of the gate. In other words, the scoffer had become the gatekeeper. Not a good job to have when you're between tables of cooked food and desperately starving people. And so the people trampled him in the gate, and he died, just as the man of God had said, who spoke when the king came down to him. So it happened, just as the man of God had spoken to the king, saying, two seahs of barley for a shekel and a seah of fine flour for a shekel shall be sold tomorrow about this time in the gate of Samaria. Then that officer had answered the man of God and said, now look, if the Lord would make windows in heaven, could such a thing be? And he had said, in fact, you shall see it with your eyes, but you shall not eat of it. And so it happened, for the people trampled him in the gate, and he died. Beware, limit God to what is humanly possible or personally conceivable, and you'll miss out on many of the Lord's blessings. Faith expands the possibilities.
You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams, here at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is working his way through the book of 2 Kings, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. Within this book, you hear about the continuation of the divided kingdom of Israel. It wasn't ideal in any way. The kings and the people at that time dove further and further into idolatry, straying away from the one true God. God used his prophets during these years to try to draw the people back to himself. But in more cases than not, the people ignored and disregarded the prophets he'd send to speak to the nation. Mankind can be stubborn and rebellious left to themselves. They needed an intervention that was greater than what a human king could bring. If you'd like to hear more messages like this one, head over to sandyadams.org. Once again, that's sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain, under the About tab. If you're in the Atlanta area, why not come visit us? We have services at 9:15 and 11:15 a.m. There's more information and directions at sandyadams.org. Well, that's all we have time for today, but we look forward to continuing this study with you in the book of 2 Kings. Pastor Sandy has more to share with you here on Sandy Adams Radio.